Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at the Graymere Church of Christ.
We'll go ahead and get started. Good to have you here, especially as we continue our summer series. We were going to do a panel discussion on a table, but we thought that if we were behind the numbers, that might not be good. So we're down a little bit closer, and we wanted to be in a place, too, where everybody could see. And so hopefully we'll have done that. But what we really want to do tonight is continue the conversation that has been started this month as we have thought through reaching out to others. We've talked about becoming an inside-out church. Bill Watkins shared with us that encouragement. Taft Ayers was with us and talked about how we reach out to others. Jim Gardner talked about sharing God's word with others. We've had Brian Gregory here to talk about serving others. And we've even spent some time Sunday with Dr. Gilmore thinking about the changes in our society and the next generation. And so what we want to do today is really think practically about some of those things. There's a reference in the Old Testament book of 1 Chronicles 12 and verse 32 where the sons of Issachar are described. And I've always liked the kind of description. There were men who understood the times and knew which way Israel should go. And so what we want to do is try to understand our times and try to think about the way God's people should go as we continue to reach out to others. And so I've already introduced Todd and Colton to you a little bit. We're very excited that they're able to have family with us. Janice here, and then Colton's mother, Tracy Shannon, is here, and then Roy and Clara Shannon, who many of you know from Graymere days, and their daughter, Rebecca Doris, and her husband, Charles, and their children. They're all here with us as well. I know many of you know them and got to see them, and that's a special thing, so we're glad they could join us for that. But what we want to do is just think from the standpoint of putting ourselves in the place of those who are in what we'll call, for lack of a better term, the 20-something or young adult category. Those who have graduated from high school and are kind of trying to find out, especially in church, where they fit. Where do they fit in a congregation? And so what we want to do tonight is just think practically. This is not to unveil any kind of new program or new plan. This is just us thinking personally. What can we do to try to involve others in this age group? And this really got started in my mind, I guess it's been about a year ago, when I sat down with Todd over dinner, and we were talking about some of the things that he was going through as he was helping with the 20-somethings ministry. And I know the Mount Juliet group spent a lot of time with the Creve Hall group, and some of our members here have been part of those young adult groups over the years too. And so I was thinking it would be nice to hear from that perspective. And so that's just what we're going to do tonight, and we have a few questions we're going to be thinking through, and just want us to understand how can we know the times and know which way we should go. And so we'll do this very conversational style. We're going to have podiums out here, but I thought that might look too much like a debate, without be moderating a debate, so we decided not to do that. But Colton, we'll start with you. This is something that I think when we think of young adults, maybe the first thing that comes to mind. But why is it difficult sometimes for those who graduate high school to come back and to fit in a congregation? Why is that a challenge?
I think there's a few things. One, there's not as much structure at college, of course. And so it's much easier to fall away in college than it is at home. A lot of college students feel like there's no place at their home congregation because you think they've had the youth group for so many years and they felt really a part of the youth group, and they come back from college and now youth group is kind of elementary, and a lot of young adult programs if I got close to Todd it would mess up. I don't want to be close to Todd anyway.
No one does.
And then so they come home from college, they have they're not a part of the youth group anymore. Then they see the young adult group, and a lot of, I don't know how it is here, but a lot of young adult groups are primarily young marrieds and young families, and so they don't fit in with them exactly. And then a lot of the adults, this can't be helped usually, but a lot of adults see them as the 12-year-old that came up and asked for candy. And they don't feel like a 12-year-old anymore because they're not. They feel like an adult. And so it's hard, in a nutshell, it's hard because they feel like they don't have a place. So.
And sometimes it's hard for us to think
from their perspective as well. Okay. What do you think, Todd? What are some things you've seen working with the 20-somethings?
Working with the 20-somethings and the teens in Mount Juliet, I've seen what maybe you've seen as well. You have such a large, vibrant youth group, and then there's kind of a drop-off almost instantaneously, and you wonder, was it something I did, or what happened there, how can we prevent it? I know I've asked myself that and tried to fight against it. In my thinking on this, I think of the parable of the sower and the different soils that are examined there, and we really don't know. I kind of regret that the teens aren't here, that we can't talk to them now. We really don't know where their heads are truly at until they're given a chance to cast their own vote, as you may say, with their time and with their resources like they can in college. They're kind of driven and led here, for lack of a better term, so you see what they're really made of, I guess, when they can make their own choices. And that's a difficult set of choices to make. So we see that, and it looks like falling away. It looks like distancing yourself from maybe your family, church family even. But that's just their reality hitting them in the face, I think. And so it's tough, and I don't want you to take it personally. It's nothing you did. I don't think there's anything at Mount Juliet even we could do to keep it 100% retention rate. It's just the nature of this transition is very abrupt and very alarming, I think, to them.
Yeah, that is a big transition where they all of a sudden have some freedom that they haven't had before. What would you say are some of the top needs, spiritual needs or concerns that 20-somethings have that maybe we would do well to think about?
Some things you do well to think about, like Colton mentioned, I think the 20-somethings group, the young adult group, is defined almost by the lack of other definition. They're the ones not in school. They're the ones not married. They're the ones not this and that and that. So the challenge for you as a church family is to find what they are. The thing I hope I'll say quite a few times is that the thing I'll task you with is to spend time with them and actually learn to define them in some way. I can't do that from here. I don't think there's any commonality any more than there's commonality between us all here. We're all very diverse, but the challenge is to actually get to know them, and they can't be pigeonholed, and I think that's a strength and also a weakness when it comes to playing. So they're seeking that definition for themselves, and they could honestly use your help with that too. How to make choices, how to use what they've learned in their childhood, whether it's in church or not even in church. You'll meet some where you're not sure who taught them that, but your job now, when you meet them, is to guide them as best you can.
Absolutely. So you've got a situation where they're, in many ways, learning what their own needs are and what they're wanting. But what do you see out of the young adults you work with? What are some of the top spiritual needs, things that they're passionate about?
I think, which one do you want, needs or passion? Either one?
Both.
Oh, okay. I think one big need for the whole young adult culture as far as teaching is the importance of the church. We lose so many young adults, not because they lose their faith in Jesus, because the research says they're losing faith in the church, and it's pretty prideful kind of, but they think they can do it a better way. And so that's the thing that I think we need to be teaching a lot of as far as what some of their needs are. And there's some deep theological, biblical things about the church that are just beautiful that really resonate with young adults, like the bride of Christ, the body, you know, like an organism. And those things, they love those things. And I think it's something that we really need to key in on a lot, because young adults really want authenticity. They want people to be real. And so when we take away those beautiful things of the church, all they see is a bunch of people struggling. We're humans, right? And that's what we're struggling together to be like Christ. But when you take the Christ part out of it, that's what they see, and they get frustrated with that. So I think the importance of a church as far as a need is a huge thing.
You mentioned authenticity, which is a big need for this generation. What can we do to be more authentic, to be more real, to show that side to others? Can you think of anything specific that we can do, or what have you seen that they responded to?
As far as what we've done, it has worked really well with this, and it's worked well because they want to be real with each other. Every Tuesday we have accountability / study times, and the college age gets together and they tell their life story, really simple, and they tell how Jesus has worked through their life and things they struggle with. And that is just like more than anything else. That, and we just got to Great Oaks in Memphis about two or three months ago. So we're new to all this as well, but it's just been awesome. And I think the more, this is a very general statement, but the more they see how real older folks are, the more they want to come back. If this place looks like if the church looks like a perfect place, it's not for them, because they're not, and they need to see authenticity. That's one of their big things they always come back to, is I just wish people would talk to me about my struggles more, because I need that. They need that. So,
what advice would you give to people who are wanting to work with a group of young adults? And you've had some experience doing that, and I know there's a team of people that do that, but what would you tell someone who's thinking about starting to work with that age group?
Well, where to start? And we went over these questions before, but one of the answers that I recall is not that there's a commonality of passion. There's a commonality of communication style or communication preference that might be a paradigm shift from what works for other age groups. How am I doing? Great. Things like announcements from the pulpit and the announcement sheet, if you have one of those things, are not going to work. I find it funny when they're even addressed at Mount Juliet, because you're too late at that point. It needs to be instantaneous and fluid and rapid. So I answered a lot of your questions with technology and my phone and Facebook and things like this. That's the lingua franca, if I can say that. Don't call me, text me. It's pretty much what they're all going to say. It's what I've said for a while. And it works that way. And so things need to be grassroots and dispersed through maybe a central person. I found that to be successful. But I guess the truth is, if it makes it to the pulpit, they've already made other plans. So don't.
It's probably already happened then.
Right,
announced, it's probably already. So you're saying, what I'm hearing you saying, mm-hmm. is when we think about technology and communicating, that it's more than just one way of communicating to people. It would probably be the primary way that age group is going to do something. And it's not necessarily about a big program that you announce and push, but about the people getting together and spending that time.
It's not just communication. It's the community. I know that may seem silly, or like I'm worshiping this thing. It's not that, though. Imagine there's a new state that's formed and there's no one there. The structure's built and there's no people there. I mean, that's what the internet is, for lack of a better phrase. It's being populated right now, and that's where they are. So your job is to go there and meet them where they are. And I realize there's all sorts of other complicating factors there, but that's the way I like to think of it. That is where they are, and if you want to speak to them, that's where they'll hear you.
What should we keep in mind, especially if we want to reach out to a group that sometimes can, based on schedule and based on things, attendance could fluctuate in class.
Right.
And I know you've taught class with that group for a while. What are some good things to keep in mind if you're teaching that group on Sunday or Wednesday?
A quote that I enjoy, Einstein said this. He says, it's not that I'm so smart, it's that I stay with the problem longer. I don't want you to see fluctuating attendance as an indicator of your inability to teach or the church's inability to fill in the blank. That's the nature of the schedules. They work non-traditional hours, non-traditional jobs, and have to make choices that people with set routines don't. And so some people you only see on Wednesday night. Some people you only see three times total and never again. So the emphasis I'd like to leave with you is that you make an extra effort to be kind to these people, to emphasize and leave no room for doubt of your generosity and your care for them. Because honestly, it may be the last time you see them. They may go on to another church or another state. When you work non-traditional jobs, waiting tables, whatever it is, you could pack up and go to Oregon next week, and we can't all say the same thing, but they can, and that's the reality. That's the character you're dealing with. And I don't want you to think of evangelism as a door-knocking, instantaneous conversion, you know, I've got a pool in the truck, let's get this done. It's a relationship. I want you to, for lack of a better term, to think of it as friendship. Ministry equals friendship. They don't operate without each other. So your job isn't to, now have you heard the steps of salvation yet? Your job is to become friends with them, and then they will hear that from you. David Shannon, someone we all know, I think he said that rules without relationship breeds rebellion. And I think the same is true in this industry. I've been at work all day for this demographic. What's missing is a relationship and friendship, and then they can hear what you have to say after that.
So that rules without relationship breeds rebellion or resentment. So in other words, you're thinking about having a relationship that earns kind of the right to talk about some of those things.
And it could take much longer. Don't think of it as a semester or year, but it's the long game. Your job isn't to convert the unconverted or restore those who need it. Your job is to show them the love of Christ, simply, to encourage discipleship, simply. And if you feel like you failed at that, you know, God gives the increase. That's not something you should burden yourself with.
So we're thinking about planting and watering and basically building on those relationships. Something that comes up a lot, I know when we've talked about the idea of having relationships or belonging, and how that is very important. It may be different than the way we think about, you know, we might think about going to a congregation and deciding, I want to place membership and then I want to get involved. But in many ways, with the kind of the millennial or the 20-something generation, belonging comes first.
Yeah.
So how have you seen that in your ministry?
It's really interesting. I just found out actually Wednesday night that a girl was not a member, that had been really involved, went to Oklahoma with us, served with us, did all these things with us, and she had never been a part of the Great Oaks Church. And so for young adults, millennials, whatever you want to call them, it's belonging first, and then they'll change the way they'll behave and they'll change their beliefs. In the past, it's been, you know, if you believe this and you behave this way, you can belong here. And I don't think it was ever like a set thing, but, you know, people would come in, they'd hear what you had to say. If they like it, you'd do a study with them, show them some film strips, and they'd be baptized. They'd become a member, and then you'd hope a few months down the road they'd start serving with you eventually, right? And now that's completely bypassed, and they're serving with you first to create a relationship with you, and then they're going to maybe change their behavior and their beliefs. But for young adults, belonging comes first. If they don't trust you, they're not going to hear what you have to say, period. That's a big, huge generality, I realize that. But I shouldn't say period, I guess. But for the most part, that's what it is. They have to trust you, and that comes through individual relationships.
So that key of spending time and mm-hmm. and building those relationships is what's so important. And I think sometimes we forget how our ministries sometimes can be structured. You know, a lot of what we do in a congregation is based on kind of activities for families, which are great, and we're trying to help our families. But from the perspective of someone who maybe just graduated high school or even is just out of college and isn't married and is working, how does that feel sometimes when they sort of see all this emphasis on family?
Yeah, well, I think that's a huge deal. You'll notice that some congregations have a ton of singles and some congregations have none. It's because that some congregations cater to singles better than other congregations. And I don't have like the answer, of course, but I think it's important for us, even from the pulpit, in our Bible classes, Jesus was single, Paul was single. Well, that should be good enough for us. I mean, it's not wrong to be single. And it's important to talk about the family, don't misunderstand, but if we're not talking about living a holy single life and having some events, and you have to be careful because if you have all single events and you totally displace them, then they don't feel like a part, so it's just this balancing act. But a few singles events during the year, coupled with young adult events and Bible studies and whatever, it's really important. Because if you don't do that, most churches don't have singles. And Great Oaks is struggling with that right now. We have a huge young married children group, but we have no singles unless they're in college. So, and we don't have any singles events. So I think they fit hand in hand.
Absolutely. And, you know, teaching on those things is definitely very important. One of the things that we've talked about, too, just as we've emailed and talked back and forth, is the idea of what young adults are looking for. Not necessarily things that are, you know, cool or, you know, like the hip, trendy thing. It seems like that doesn't appeal to young adults, as we've talked about, which is great news for me, personally. Right. If you don't have to be cool, then that gets me excited. I don't know about you guys. But as they think about that, why do you think that is? Why do you think that trying to be kind of cool or trendy, why do you think that doesn't appeal?
I think Colton hit on the head earlier, authenticity. Fashionable things and stylish things is a moving target, and you can't keep it up for very long, even if you do hit the target once. So they're looking for a bedrock. They're looking for a foundation. I would say even if you know you meet a 20-something and they move from another state or something, and you know, at least they tell you they went to church their whole life, I would say the curriculum needs to be this fundamental stuff as though they were starting all over again. Just nail that home, because, like I said, you may only see them once. You may not know their full story. I would please emphasize that to them. But do it with an expectation that they actually be able to teach it, to turn around and teach it, and have that expectation of them. I think they'll rise to that challenge.
So don't take anything for granted when you're teaching a class. Don't take for granted that everybody there from all their diverse areas would know, all to be on the same page.
Yes, just because you're from Columbia or just because you're from Nashville, okay. I mean, let's start again. Mm-hmm. I think people will respond to that. And like we discussed, hit tough issues. But do it with the Bible, and this is a very challenging point. I don't know who among you is ready for this, but to actually answer their questions with the Bible, because they're going to ask difficult ones of you. So being ready to answer those is tough, and they're looking for someone who can, honestly.
What are some of those questions that they're asking? What are some things that's important to be ready for in a class setting to talk about?
I guess mostly just to answer. You know, the things that they hear all day at work or from their friends, you know, laws that may be passing about the family, other structures, just the way, you know, countries ought to run and govern and help people. I mean, things that they hear about, things that are newsworthy, they'll consider these just like the friends will. And if they're anything like me, they got their news from Facebook in the first place. And so your job is to combat that. I'm serious. That's where I get all my news. And so And if you, kind of going back to what I started with, if you know what's being published there, you know what they're thinking about, what news articles need to be, you know, answered if they're espousing something that's against God's design for living or the family or anything.
Absolutely. What are some things, just some practical things that we can do? I know we're speaking in general terms and really dealing with a problem that I think Christians everywhere are facing and struggling and wanting to reach this generation. But what would be something practical that if I wanted to leave here tonight with an idea of how I could encourage someone who is in that age group, what are some things we could do to do that?
I think it's Titus 2. It says older women teach younger women, older men teach younger men, self-control, all those things. I love their husbands, things like that. I think that's the most important thing for young adults, for college age especially. We get so much information anywhere we get it from social media, from media, from Google. I mean, this generation has more information than ever before, and there's no wisdom to decipher all that information. I think it's imperative that older men and older women go to these young adults individually, these families, these college kids, and show them what real wisdom is. That's not through a program, because this doesn't work as well. It's through what God thought the church should be and what Paul thought the church should be. Individual relationships, and that feels real to them. That feels authentic. So that's a burden for all of us, I think, because they need real wisdom, because they have so much information. They don't need more information. They need how to decipher that information. So
how to sort through that. What do you think about some of those? What are some practical things that we could do tonight if we met somebody that was visiting here that was in that age group.
Right. I would say go out to eat with them. That may be too direct or not complex enough for you. I'm sorry if that wasn't complex enough. Try this. Hey, we're going to insert your favorite restaurant. Would you like to come? That usually works. In way of teaching, I agree with what Colton says. You do need to do that, but it doesn't look like this. Hi, what do you need to know from me?
Sure.
I have 30 minutes before Matlock comes on or whatever. You need to go out to eat with them. But our pastime is eating out. And I know that's not, Dave Ramsey doesn't like that. He's not a young adult minister. It's costly in terms of time and money, but that's what I'm asking you to do. I know it's not complex, but they will say yes more times than will you stand in the parking lot and talk with me. They will go. And because they live non-traditional lives, they don't have a kitchen, they don't have groceries, they don't have whatever it takes to go eat at home. They would love to do that. If you want to go eat at their house, I've eaten at the Shannon's house more times than I can count. And I appreciate that, and they will too. So, I mean, I hope maybe that's too simple. But.
No, it's not. Well, and it goes back to just that spending time.
Yes.
The importance of that relationship. And sometimes we're thinking so much about events and about putting something together where there's a lot of numbers, but it seems like what I'm hearing you guys say is that just that one-on-one investing time in going out to eat, you know, if they don't have a big enough apartment to invite a lot of people over, then you can go out and eat with them and make those kind of connections that way.
I would like to say, too, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you were turning.
That's fine.
I would say the restaurant is huge. The two things I would say, phones, learn how to use it. Two, restaurants, learn how to be there and be a Christian and be a good example. Some of these people you'll meet, some of the people we've met, are the servers there. If you go to a place more than once in your life, you can ask them their name. If you don't know how to talk to them, try this. How long have you worked here? You've got their life story. They're paid to talk to people. They're a captive audience. Tip them in accord with what you think generosity is. And go tell their manager they did a good job. Like, they will remember you. You have an audience there. If they're not here, go get them. I promise you they work at the restaurants you go to tonight. If you haven't eaten, they work there. I promise.
Absolutely. Well, that's good. That's just thinking in terms of our mission field all around us.
They know you're Christians, too, and I don't know if any of you work in restaurants, but I've heard through Facebook that it's almost like a groan in the waiters, you know, on Sunday afternoon when they see the Christians coming. And that's a slight to me. I take that personally, and I want to change that. I want them to be happy. You know, if Jesus came into your restaurant, would you be upset with that, or would you be happy? You'd say, this is going to be a good way to spend my occupational time. And I want them to have that experience. They'll see you pray. They know where you came from. And so please do well with that. So there's ways to do that. We can go over later. If you want to take me out, you can.
Yeah. If you want to take Todd out to eat, please. He can discuss those things. I do think, too, and this is a question that I know opens me up as far as maybe taking kind of wincing a little bit because I can recognize things that I've done. But what do you think are some common mistakes or some things to avoid if we're wanting to reach out to that group? What are some things that we do sometimes that may send a message we don't mean to send, but we should probably avoid?
Well, I work mostly with college kids right now, so that's where my mind's going automatically. But even young adults, they want, like what Todd talked about a little, they want real classes. They don't want to be viewed as babies. They want to be viewed as adults. When they come back from school, they want to be viewed as adults, whether they should be or not. but you know, whether fair or not, that's how they feel. And I think we could cater to that a little bit. I think also it's hard sometimes because adolescence is lasting for so long. And I've heard some people say, you know, we'll get the young adults back when they have kids. They'll come back. And adolescence is reaching the point where you're talking about 35 or 40 before they have kids that care about church. And so if that's your outlook, then that's awful. Because you're missing so many life experiences. You're missing so many teachable moments. It's not feasible for the church to wait till they have kids anymore or have kids. That's probably the biggest mistake I've ever heard. And I think that's a bad attitude. And it's not all the church's fault. I'm not trying to sound negative exactly. But it should be a point, you know, Paul says in Ephesians 5, the church is without spot or wrinkle. Every generation matters. And so if that's really how we feel, then we should be reaching out to them as best we can, not till they have kids. You know?
Absolutely. So not waiting on that. And even sometimes it's easy for us to expect them to just go ahead and be involved with whatever we're doing, but if we're not treating them like adults, that can be a real challenge.
Yeah. And it's important to plug them in as best that we can. Plug them into ministries they want to serve. I have some guys mowing an older couple's house, the shut-ins that can't get out, and they love it. I mean, they absolutely love it. They go every week and talk to them. And we have some helping with benevolence and just kind of more individual stuff, but young adults latch on to that, and you'd think they wouldn't, but some of them wouldn't, but all of them love it. So.
And that passion for service, too, is something I hear.
Yeah, justice, service, fairness, big words.
What do you think? What are some other maybe common mistakes that we can make if we're not careful?
I think of maybe three. The first is I've been to your website. They've been to your website too. I have all the information in the world. I can get it. I think there's. Did they respond? Are they responsible up there for it? Because I could speak directly to them. I would take the part down. There's like a young adult section. If it doesn't link to something like a contact or something like a calendar that is actually live and updated, they can tell. And so just completely practical, I would remove that or edit it somehow. One thing I spoke about earlier, the treating it like another class, treating it just like the class before it and the class after it, it will not survive in that environment. The announcements need to be different. They need to be sent differently and distributed because you know their phone number, because you know their email address. That kind of thing.
So you're saying instead of announcing it like you might from the pulpit, you're thinking in terms of texting and getting that across that way?
It will not work. I can't. I mean, I think I just said that. So, I will say some of them may not appear to merit your investment. They may, I don't know how better to say this, but it may be the kind of person you don't think you'd want to go out to you with. Or, you know, I don't want them riding in my car. I don't know. You have to. Or something like this. I just want to emphasize that they're all going to be like that. I say they like it's a negative thing, but the demographic we're speaking of, they didn't make the choices you made. I didn't have professional clothing, you know, when I was in this age group. So they're going to appear to not adhere to the things that we find valuable. So please love them individually. Extend to them the grace that you were extended in that same age group. I can say some things at work, though. If you want, I think summer camp had it right. I see where the greatest command is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. I think if you can encourage those aspects of a person generally, I think you're on the right track. If you can have events where they go out and literally play, or crafts where they give or make something for the kindergarten class or something like this, this is attractive to them. They want these things to develop in their life, whether they're cognizant of that or not. So, if it looks like summer camp, don't say, hey, 20-somethings, we're going to do summer camp stuff, but say to them, we're going to do this, we're going to play kickball. One of the most successful things we did one time, I said, bacon party, like bacon, like pig meat bacon. And they love that. They don't need a reason. So,
just eccentric. What happened at the bacon party? Just made bacon?
Pretty much what it sounds like. Just events of that nature. We did ruin
it sounds
some,
good. I mean,
we ruined some cookware. Point of caution for the bacon party. Say no turkey bacon. Have you seen this? Awful stuff. Okay. No turkey bacon. But
well, we'll have to talk about that later.
I'm serious. Okay. No turkey bacon.
I believe you. What are some other things that you've seen work well?
I think it's important to have, we've been talking like individually, I think it's important to bring them together as a group, of course. Like Todd said, that it doesn't have to be like huge events. Like I worked with youth for a while, and I felt like a lot of our events had to be like super planned and cool things there and flashy and all these things, but it doesn't have to be that way for young adults. We can play cards, come over to the house, we'll play cards, and come over to the house is a great instant success. So anytime you come over to the house, it's awesome. But like we just played cards the other night for like 3 hours, and it was great. We had visitors come and all these things, which I hate playing cards, but we did it, and they loved it. So, I'm not a part of the young adult group, but things ought to be super planned, and it's great to have a deacon or a minister that is ready to spend time with them a lot. And even after events, they're going to hang around for another hour just to get on your nerves. No, just to feel like they belong, and that belonging is a huge thing for our age group. So if they don't feel like they belong, they're not going to come regularly or ever.
They will find a place where they belong.
Yeah, they'll belong somewhere or find the place where they can feel that. Absolutely. What would you say, and we've got a few more minutes, but what would you say if you think if that generation or if young adults had one thing that they would want us to know as a congregation that's saying we want to try to reach them, what do you think they would say? What would that message be?
I think they would ask any congregation they go to, is there a place where we can fit in here and make a difference with you? And that goes back to they want to belong before they change, before they place membership and all these things. From your announcements, they say, if you're visiting with us, we'd love for you to come serve over here or help with this or whatever. They want to have ways that they can plug in, be a part of the group and serve, not just a part of the young adult group or the college group or the singles group, but a part of the church. They want something, and that's why so many are, I don't know if you've heard of this, there's a big push, people leaving denominations and going to leaving some kind of churches and going to high church and liturgy and all these things, because they want something that's real, something that's authentic, something that stakes them down with their legacy and history, and something that feels ancient. I think we have that at church, and I think if we push that out and made that known in a big way, say we have something that we try to only follow the Bible, we're not denominational, we have all these things that young adults now, for whatever reason, are super attracted to. And if we can say, you can come here, be a part of that, belong, fit in here, serve here, come on, be a part of us, that would be unreal.
And that goes back to that teaching about the church you mentioned, the importance of understanding the church. What do you think, if they had one statement they could get to us, what do you think that would be from your perspective?
And if I were their spokesperson?
If you were the spokesperson, you were elected to give the statement.
Excellent. I like to divide my answer into two parts. Some of the people, some of the 20-somethings, young adults you'll see, have a church background, some don't, and that's how I'll divide it. The ones with a church background and they know they're interested in developing their spiritual life, I'm echoing Colton entirely, hear my, send me. They want to be a part of the ministries. There's not a, they don't want to serve each other, they want to give back to the community. This is the age where you realize that you've been handed everything and you want to give back, and if they can find a way to do that, they will. And like I said, the way they find out what to do isn't you handing them a tract that says, here's the things we do, fill it out and hand it to me. You go out to eat with them and they'll tell you. I think once you get to a point where you're talking about prayer requests, I know we do this in a various array of settings, in class or personally, if you can get to that point, I think you could say at least better what they're capable of doing. And so please get to that point by taking them out to you.
So when they get comfortable enough to talk about
prayer requests, I mean, that's something, that's language I hope we all understand. And if we can get to that, I mean, ask them, is there anything I can pray with you, for you about? And the second answer I would give is from the people who do not have a church background. They came with a friend. They came because you were nice to them at the restaurant. They came for whatever reason. They were lost and found their way in. They would want you to prove what it is you're saying. They would want you to live out the claims that you're making. Lukewarmness is as unattractive to them as it is to God. And it's unattractive, I think, to all of us. And they're capable of seeing that. So they would say, prove it. Maybe not in a mean or aggressive way, but they are, wondering why the news portrays you this way and why my dad said this about this group of people. And so they're going to want you to stand and deliver an answer. And, I mean, that's where we all have to rise to the challenge.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you both making the time to be with us and sharing some of these insights. I hope this has been as helpful to you as it has been to me, at least as we've been going through and discussing some of these things.
When Paul describes the church in 1 Corinthians 12 as a body, there are all different parts to that body. And I think of the way that applies even to our age groups. And we've been doing a lot of discussion in the last few weeks about understanding the different generations that are involved in a congregation. And so we want to make sure that we're thinking about how we can reach that group. And I would encourage those of us who are here, just start thinking of some ways personally. It seems to me what I've taken from this is that relationship and that personal relationship is even more effective than trying to put together a big scale program or an event. And that's something all of us can do. You know, we don't have to be necessarily organized into a program to do that.
It's not the same thing as, you know, having a youth minister. I mean, you can. You are a valid person.
Thank you.
But I mean, Colton's good, does.
Yeah.
But the idea is you're not going to be able to cater to just all of the 20-somethings by yourself. You will have a few that you are friends with. The same that you would relate to any of the other people here you're friends with, and you would have over, not, I mean, you could, if your house is big enough, every single person, but it's no different than becoming friends, and the way to do it is just a little bit different with this age group.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you all being with us, and this has been an encouragement to us. I'd like for us, I know the bell's going to ring here in just a minute, but I'd like for us to close in a prayer. That's pretty good, wasn't it? I mean, that wasn't quite a minute, but we'll go ahead and we'll close in a prayer, and let's just think of some ways that we can reach out to everyone. And I know we've been challenged the last few weeks, and I don't want us to just keep feeling, we've got all these challenges our way. I think there's so many great things going on here. We can just add this to our list of people to reach out to and ways that we can serve. And so I hope we can do that. Let's bow for a word of prayer, and then we'll be dismissed. Father in heaven, we thank you so much for the opportunity to come together and to reflect on how we can reach others. Father, we know that every soul is important to you, and that no matter what the age or the situation, you care about each one, and we should too. And we pray that we would have that passion and desire to reach others. I thank you for Todd and for Colton, and for what they're doing, for their families that support them as they seek to reach this group. And I pray that we could act with wisdom and discernment, and that ultimately we could spread your word and glorify your name, and that more could be added to your body. Thank you so much for the blessings you've given us here. We pray that you would go with us throughout this week and help us to continue to serve you and to lift up your name. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Don't forget, if you would like to help move some furniture, elementary hallway would be the place to go.